What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Dolphins in That Podcast. I'm Daniel Ifusi. That is David Neal rejoining us this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Quick reminder before we start, make sure to subscribe to the Miami Herald YouTube page, like, share, comment, as well as subscribe to the Miami Herald. Now, we are in what I like to call prime draft season. April has arrived. The NFL draft is just a couple weeks away. We're several weeks removed from the first wave of free agency, so things are starting to slow down a little bit. We still got some news to break down as we preview the draft and look at the state of the Dolphins roster as it stands. However, we do have to start with some really tragic news that broke Monday. Former Dolphins cornerback Vontae Davis was found dead inside his Broward home Monday morning at the age of 35. Davie police arrived at his house in Southwest Ranches, where he was found unresponsive. Investigators said that there's no foul play expected and a cause of death has not been given yet. However, this investigation remains active and ongoing. So, of course, we will provide further breaking details as we get them. Davis was a 25th overall pick of the Dolphins in the 2009 NFL draft. He spent his first three seasons in Miami, where he started 36 games. The Dolphins then traded Davis to the Indianapolis Colts before the 2012 season. And his career really took off in Indianapolis. He was a two-time Pro Bowl selection in 2014 and 2015. He got a big deal along the way. And he spent six seasons in Indianapolis before he was released midway through the 2017 season. February 2018, he signed with the Buffalo Bills, where his career ended just a couple months later in very unforgettable fashion. Davis leaving in the at halftime of a week two game and subsequently announcing his retirement. And obviously, there was an outpour of emotion, tributes, statements after this tragic news broke, including from the Dolphins as well, who said in a statement on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, "We are heartbroken by the sudden passing of former Dolphins cornerback Vontae Davis and extend our deepest condolences to his family and loved ones during this difficult time." Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, also wrote as well, "Extremely saddened to hear the passing of Vontae Davis, a great guy, teammate, player. My prayers to Vontae's family." Now, David, you had some things that you wrote as well on social media, and as somebody who covered him as a former Dolphins beat writer, just want to kind of get your thoughts on the unfortunate and tragic passing of Vontae Davis.
Well, Vontae had obviously some episodes that, indicated he might have had some, might have had some problems to that he was dealing with, problems that I'm familiar with from my family. I don't really, obviously we don't know what, we don't know yet, what caused what killed him. As a person to deal with, he was great. I wrote the first kind of large scale story on him after he was drafted. Spoke with his grandmother, who famously very close to because of the Hard Knocks thing. I got to call my grandmother, but like when people were kind of making fun of him for that, I got it because she really kind of raised he and his brothers and sisters. And Vontae was known as kind of the preacher of the group. They were always in church, like, as grandmothers who raise us will do what they can. And Vontae would, she was telling me, Vontae would do, like, they would sometimes have church in the house, and Vontae would do, like, would be the preacher. He'd be the pastor. And one time, like, the lights went out or something like that during this storm, and Vontae's like, no, it's okay, it's okay, it's just God talking to us. And he always seemed to have a, he had a great sense of humor, or I don't know if it's a sense of humor, but have a humor about him, and be, and he seemed to be kind of basically have great joy of football, and he loved talking about football. He had that high, very high pitched voice, and just even sometimes listening to Vontae say very pedestrian things was kind of brought a smile to your face just from the way he said it. He was I remember he was talking, about pass coverage one time. He said, "Hey, you can't do that because then you lean this way and then they lean that, and then that referee gonna go." It's stuff that doesn't translate well unless you're unless you're there. I sent Jeff Darlington, who was my partner on the Dolphins beat at the time, sent him just a message just saying it's football, because that was like one time he's talking to Vontae about something, asked him about something, Vontae just said, "Oh, that's great. It's football." And it became one of those things that we would just say to each other to make each other laugh the whole rest of the season. He was, they say he was fun to talk to, enjoyed the game. There was, talk, he had issues behind the scenes. There were some signs of immaturity. And overall, he had a pretty good NFL career. And, I guess, it all came together for him in Indianapolis, and very, very happy for him. He was a good guy. He was one of those guys you couldn't help but root for. And he really did shush the crowd after a pick six at Dolphin Stadium his rookie year. He shushed the crowd, and we're like, why is he doing that? And Vernon Davis on this, I don't know, they had some reality TV thing they were doing. Monte, Monte! How do you go shush your own crowd? You shush the crowd, your home crowd. Like, no, man, that was just my critics. That was my critics. And there were some other players, they go, "Oh, he just got a little excited. He forgot where he was." Yeah, he's it, it I feel bad, he just you feel bad anytime somebody passes that soon. And obviously, leaving behind brothers, sisters, his grandmother. I mean, it just is just sad that he was a good, fun guy to cover. Good, seemed like a good guy. Seemed to gain some maturity later on. And when he left the Bills, like I wrote on Twitter, I said, I figured, if Vontae does that, he is truly through. Okay, he is truly through. He doesn't have anything left to give you, and that's it. And so, yeah,
Yeah,
but sad deal. Which,
most definitely. I know, obviously, his time with the Dolphins, predated my coverage, my time on the beat. But obviously, he was a DMV guy. The younger brother of Vernon Davis, who was a standout in Maryland and a standout in the NFL as well. So you know that. And again, just from the outpouring of tributes, whether it was Jim Irsay or T.Y. Hilton or Reggie Wayne or just people across the league, how loved and beloved he was. So again, obviously, our thoughts and prayers go to that family, and his loved ones in this trying times. Now, it's obviously very tough to transition to, just talking about the game. We're going to try to do our best, again, as we look ahead to the draft, kind of look back at some news from when you weren't here last week. We did have the owners' meeting
Oh,
last
man.
week. I had
For
to, I had to.
vacation, man. I'm
I
sorry.
respect it. I respect it. I had to hold it down. I had to hold it down.
Okay.
A
All
lot of breaking news from the owners meeting in
right.
Orlando. We'll kind of look back and look ahead to, again, some news that we haven't gotten to discuss as a duo yet. Mike McDaniel at the league owners meetings, for the first time confirmed that an offer from the Dolphins has been made to free agent wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. Now, the free agent receiver visited the Dolphins about 2 weeks ago, but left without a without left left without signing a contract. Mike McDaniel said that this is something that could take some time. The Dolphins don't have a ton of cap space. Bringing Odell in will probably take a little bit more than chump change. And Mike McDaniel said that talks are continuing, are going to be ongoing over the next couple of weeks, likely. Looks like maybe this is something that could drag past the draft, as the Dolphins kind of see who they can bring in the draft and then assess the state of the roster. But it's clear that the Dolphins are on the search for a number three wide receiver. They did lose Cedric Wilson, who signed with the Saints, but they re-signed Braxton Berrios, River Craycraft, but they do need a little bit more juice behind Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and boy, Odell Beckham would at least provide the name recognition as well. And he had a pretty solid year with the Ravens, a career high 16.1 yards per reception. Not the Pro Bowl numbers that we were accustomed to the first couple of years of his career. But I said it last week on the podcast. I think that in this specific role as a number three wide receiver in this offense, I think he can be very productive. Now, I gave my thoughts last week, but I want to kind of switch it up. For the 2024 season, would you rather have Odell Beckham Jr. at whatever price point that beat may be? We don't know yet. It's definitely going to be, he signed for 1 year, 15 mil last year. I don't know if he's going to get that, but it is going to take some significant money to bring him in, I believe. Would you rather have Odell as a number three wide receiver at whatever salary cap contract that might be? Or would you rather have them bring in a rookie wide receiver, maybe with the 21st overall pick, maybe with their second round pick? What say you?
Because, see a general a wide receiver, see that's way too nebulous. That's way too
Well, this
nebulous
is,
a
I mean, this is a deep
question.
wide receiver draft. So, hey, I don't know if it could be LSU's Brian Thomas. It could be Xavier Worthy, who just set the new 40-yard dash record at the combine a couple of weeks back. Hey, I mean, if they get a guy in the first two rounds, it's going to be a guy who is regarded as an impact guy and can come in and make a contribution on day one or pretty early in the season.
I mean, obviously, from his numbers, he can, he can still, I don't want to say, he can still play. Seems like such an understatement, but he can still play
I
very
mean, well, a lot of
well.
people, I mean, this is Twitter talk, but a lot of people kind of see the numbers and they say, oh, he's washed. I don't think Odell is washed. I don't,
No,
he's not what he was prime Odell, pre-injuries Odell. But I think he had some really strong moments last year that could carry over. And again, a number three wide receiver role, a very well-defined number three wide receiver role.
Also, in that offense, that it, boy, there's a lot, there's a lot of other threats to deal, there's a lot of other threats to deal with. So it opens things up for you. And, in the Dolphins offense, there's also, obviously a lot of other threats there. It's going to open things up for him. So, definitely gives you a third guy you got to worry about. Not just, I think he's a bigger, would be a bigger threat than the normal slot receiver.
Yeah, I mean he's a
I just,
shorthanded receiver. He can make tough catches, which sometimes the Dolphins wide receivers, whether it's Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle, sometimes they haven't. Like we have seen Tyreek Hill, drop some passes in key moments. We have seen Jalen Waddle struggle with drops at times. Odell does not drop passes, or he very rarely drops passes.
And see, I don't know that it, that's a tough call. That's a really tough call because if you go with the with somebody out of the draft, you're getting them for a few years on that rookie deal.
And that is the
And
that's the key that's the key right there. I know I said for 2024, but you just have to naturally think, ahead as well when you bring in a number three wide receiver. I mean, when you bring in a rookie wide receiver, Tyreek Hill's entering his age 30 season. Obviously, they want to tie up Jalen Waddle for the future. But I think those are going to be some tough contract negotiations. I said it last week as well. Like if I was the Dolphins, I would be ahead of the curve, trying to pay Jalen Waddle before, Ja'Marr Chase, before Justin Jefferson gets paid. Those guys are probably going to get 30 mil. And I said it last week. I'm not saying that Jalen Waddle is going to get 30 mil, but I think he's going to get pretty close to it, just like the way the market works. Like we saw with Christian Wilkins, like when guys get paid, that just increases the floor for everybody else. So just to get another legitimate young wide receiver who can play and you've got him for the next 4 or 5 years, perhaps. I think that you're not only setting yourself up for immediate success, but long-term success as well.
And that's, I mean, that's the advantage of taking a the unknown rookie commodity, which no matter how well you think anybody, how well anybody scouted everything, they are still unknown.
For sure.
They are still unknown, and that's, that's the advantage of going with the unknown commodity over the known commodity. You pretty, I, if you're a sharp-eyed scout, you know what you're getting with Odell Beckham, and you can even see when. If things are starting to slip precipitously. So But yeah, that money thing, that cost thing, especially with the Dolphins situations.
Yeah, I mean they only have about $5 million. I think that this is one of those things that it might have to stretch until, the Xavier Howard windfall kind of kicks in. They get those that $18 million in June 1st. I think that's when we might see them start to make some moves that have to, that's why I think we might see an uptick in moves. And again, Odell might not be in a position where he wants to wait. The Dolphins might be in a position where they would like to wait. Obviously, if they brought him in and they gave an offer, there was, they're able to make, they're able to sign him now if they want to. But just kind of given the nature of where they are, I know our own Barry Jackson has been reporting that they've been kind of looking at some interior offensive linemen as well. But the it's clear that the financial terms is like this. That's the sticking point. That's what's, that's why this hasn't, that's why he's not a Dolphin yet. And I do want,
Course.
I do wonder if, what changes, if they would they draft a wide receiver and bring Odell in? Is it one or the other? I'm not saying you can't do both, but if you draft a wide receiver in the first round or maybe the second or even the third round, like you probably expect want those guys to get reps and
On
expect
the
them
field.
to be a player. If they do draft one, someone in the first 2 days, is there room for an Odell? Again, like there's already the bulk of the targets are going to Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill as it is. But if you bring in a young wide receiver, you're almost kind of stunning their growth. I don't say stunting the growth, but hey, you can only there's only so many, balls to go around for pass catchers, and you bring in the tight ends and the running back. I do wonder, how that meshes together. I think right now there's a clear void for number three wide receiver that Odell can fill. If you bring in a young wide receiver who they think is ready to contribute very early, I don't know if, those timelines kind of match.
I don't know if it necessarily stunts their growth. I mean, I think the guy, I think if they did draft someone in there and this drafted wide receiver is playing number three wide receiver, I think the snaps they get are, I think that's the experience they need. And yeah, they're not going to get as many, balls thrown to them as if they were, the number one wide receiver or number one or two on another team. But I don't think that stunts their growth. I know we like to, think, okay, first two, three rounds, get on the field immediately and contribute. But, there's plenty of guys who have benefited from, a lesser, maybe not getting as much, maybe not as much production, but just getting the snaps would, at least they'd be getting the snaps, which, if you're talking, other positions, obviously quarterback's one of them. But, if you ain't number one, you're not getting a lot of work. And I don't think that's the case at, a number three wide receiver in today's NFL. So,
That's a good point. That's a good point. I was gonna say you mentioned the snap counts. The Dolphins have, they've really limited Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle snap counts. Like they're only playing 65% of the snaps, as as usual. Starting wide receivers are on the field for just about every play. You do have, a lot of moments where Tyreek Hill isn't on the field, Jalen Waddle isn't on the field. Both of those guys are on the field. You feel a lot better about the Dolphins' offense when those guys are off the field. You got Odell Beckham Jr. and, maybe a number one, number two round receiver, as opposed to, some of the other options that they have in-house. So it'll be interesting to see what the Dolphins do in the draft, whether, that prohibits them or, takes them out of the Odell market, or maybe they get both. Maybe they don't draft a wide receiver and they circle back to Odell after the draft or maybe before. But it's really interesting. But like I said, it's very clear that they're in the market for a number three wide receiver. And we'll see who eventually fills that role soon enough. All right, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back on the other side of things, the Dolphins had a very, very busy free agency period, but they're not the only team in the division making moves. We're going to talk about one of their division rivals and see how they stack up with Miami. Stay locked with us. We'll be back soon. What's going on? Still here on the Dolphins the Net podcast with David Neal, talking all things Dolphins. Now, in the first half, we broke down the Dolphins' pursuit of a number three wide receiver and Odell Beckham Jr. In particular. And I'm going to go big picture in the second half. Again, things have kind of slowed down on the free agency front. The Dolphins, but the Dolphins was a very hectic period. A lot of turnover on the roster. Mike McDaniel spoke about that, saying, they were kind of confined or constrained by the salary cap and to make some hard decisions, and make decisions with the entirety of the team in mind. But they're not the only team in the AFC East that has made a lot of big moves. We're going to talk about the New York Jets in the second half because obviously they're the Jets, but they have made some very, very notable moves this offseason. I think that outside of the Dolphins, and maybe even more so than the Dolphins, the Jets have been very, very active. Just recently, a couple of days ago, trading for former Eagles pass rusher Hassan Reddick. They've also signed wide receiver, former Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams. So they got a big play threat for Aaron Rodgers. They've fortified the offensive line, you could say, signing former Cowboys offensive tackle Tyron Smith, trading for former Ravens offensive tackle Morgan Moses, and then signing John Simpson as a starting guard from the Ravens as well. So the Jets are making a lot of moves after a very disappointing season that was obviously headlined by the injury by Aaron Rodgers' torn Achilles injury, just what was it, six snaps into his Jets tenure. And shoot, for all the offseason moves that you want to talk about for the Jets, the biggest move might be just getting Aaron Rodgers back on the field. I gotta ask you. As you look at the moves that the Jets have made, you look at what the Dolphins have done. The Bills have kind of had a bit of a static free agency period. They released a couple guys. I think they're going to kind of retool in the draft. They have like a precarious cap situation as well. The Patriots, obviously, they're rebuilding. They got the number three overall pick, is it? But we're just going to focus on the Dolphins and the Jets. Which team is better set up for success in 2024? I'm talking about long term. I'm talking about 3, 5 years, but just for the 2024 season, which team is currently set up the best for success?
Well, I would stay with the Dolphins. You don't know what, I mean, obviously, I agree with you. The biggest addition to the Jets would be a healthy Aaron Rodgers. Theoretically, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure he takes care of himself very well. He's entering season number 20. This would be his 20, 20th season. So he's up there, and maybe he's not as fast as he once was, as
Fleet
far
of
as
foot.
running fleet of foot, right? Running the ball. But he's still mobile and can still get out. He still would be called a dual threat quarterback if he were black. Okay. No, and so. Unless I think getting him back, unless there has been, the decline has started with him, I think that's the biggest deal. And it's sort of like the guy who preceded him at quarterback in Green Bay, Brett Favre. The Brett Favre decline was really, really fast.
Like
It was
he
literally
had that
one
crazy
season.
run where he brought them to the NFC Championship game
Right,
against the
right.
Vikings, and then
And then
after
the
that it
next
was like,
season, gone. Yeah, next season, and I think the Dolphins have played them like I think the second game of the season, and you could see it, and you're like, oh, whoa, he got old over the summer, and it was like all the years caught up to him at once, and I think Aaron Rodgers takes care of himself better than Brett Favre does. I probably does not have the painkiller addiction problems, which can wear on you physically and mentally. And dealing with that and fighting that. So, yeah, if they get him back, and I still think it's going to take a little time for everything to come together there. So I'm still going to stay with the Dolphins, but yeah, getting Aaron Rodgers, the Jets with Aaron Rodgers they're a threat to win the division. Definitely a threat to win the division. And can't be taken lightly. I mean, the last couple of years, you knew you got a couple of touchdowns in the Jets, and that was probably going to be it. So.
Yeah, so this is really interesting because as I look at these two rosters, and obviously we still got the draft, we still got kind of the second wave of free agency, and I think the Dolphins we're gonna see, I don't think we're gonna see a ton of moves post draft, but we're gonna see more moves than usual just because they do have about $18 million coming in June 1st. But as I look at these current rosters, I actually think the Jets have more in place right now. I think they have more in place, but there's a lot of ifs attached to that. So, like, you look at, shoot, let's start with some of the guys that they brought in. They brought in Mike Williams, who I think he tore his ACL or is coming back from a serious knee injury, serious leg injury. I don't know if it's a given that he's going to be ready for the start of training camp. I saw some stuff out there about that. So you're going to have another kind of injury-prone guy who, when he's on the field, he is a very, he's a top of the line wide receiver, but that's an if. He struggles to stay healthy. You look at Tyron Smith, who he played most of the season last year in Dallas, but his track record says that he's gonna miss some games as well. You look at Morgan Moses, who they just brought in. He's getting up there in age. He's dealt with some injuries at times. And then obviously the big question mark is Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know if it's more so of like, is he gonna stay healthy? Because I don't, he's not, hasn't really been an injury. Like, he's dealt with injuries over the course of his career, but I wouldn't say he's an injury prone player.
No,
It's more
far
so
from it.
like, what does a 40 something year old quarterback look like coming from an Achilles injury? Where, like, it's not that he is a running back, a wide receiver, somebody, a cornerback who's cutting a lot. But you just don't know. It's the same question we have with Kirk Cousins. Like, we just don't know because it doesn't happen a lot where you have quarterbacks that are that old, suffering that type of injury, and then trying to come back and play high level ball the following year.
And it's part of his game. It's the mobility is
Yeah,
part of
moving
Aaron
around in the
Rodgers' game.
pocket, out of the pocket. He
Right.
doesn't do it like he did it in his prime, but he still does like to move around.
And he moves to get that extra few seconds. Even when he's staying in the pocket, he moves to get that extra few seconds and or sometimes extra half second. So, but yeah, it's part of his game. And so, yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah, now when I look at the Dolphins, I like what they've done in free agency, and I think that given some of the losses that were expected and ultimately did happen, I think the Dolphins made out pretty well. Like, I think, like, if I look at the roster, at the end of the 2023 season, and then you kind of add in the health of guys like Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips were coming back from injury. When I look at the roster at the end of the 2023 season and the roster that has now been assembled, I would say it's like across the board, they probably like broke even, honestly. I think that, I liked adding Jonnu Smith. I thought that they did well to get, Aaron Brewer, Aaron Brewer, to be the new starting center, it appears. I think that, whether it was Kendall Fuller or Jordan Poyer, they're kind of getting some veteran leadership in the secondary. But we said it, multiple times over the past couple of weeks. I still think that there are some fairly significant holes that need to be filled in the draft and in free agency before training camp starts, and maybe at some point during training camp. That's really on the trenches. We still don't necessarily know what's going to happen with right guard. Obviously, they brought Isaiah Wynback, who started the first 7 games at left guard. Defensive line, I know that they brought in a ton of guys, like, shoot, like a half dozen defensive linemen since the season ended. But we still don't know that any of those guys is going to be like, I'm not even going to say like be Christian Wilkins, but be some of Christian Wilkins. Like, it might really be, it really might be, like by committee approach, and that's
Well,
fine, but are you
this
gonna
could be
get the production that Christian Wilkins, and you said, hey, like you said it yourself, like they're not gonna get that from one guy, but can they get it from multiple guys? They have a lot of guys who have been part-time players who haven't really played that much time, who are still kind of growing and developing. But the defensive line, that combination of Christian Wilkins and Zach Sealer was a really, really big focal point of the defense. And even when the defense kind of struggled at times, and there was some upheaval, and things, they weren't maybe the entire defense wasn't seeing eye to eye with Vic Fangio. You could count on the defense. Like, sometimes obviously Jalen Ramsey missed first half of the season. Xavien Howard missed some time at the end. There was injuries on the safeties. The one thing you could count on was the defensive line. And obviously things
Right.
start and end in the trenches on the defensive line. So to not have Christian Wilkins and not to have anybody that you can pencil in right now and say, all right, we lost Christian Wilkins, but we know we can pencil this guy in and we're gonna get significant production, or we're gonna get some quality production. That still does concern me a bit. 'Cause again, like for me, the Dolphins' problems wasn't skill position players, because they had two of the best wide receivers in the NFL. They had two of the fastest running backs in the NFL when healthy. When Xavien Howard and Jalen Ramsey were on the field, they were pretty dang good tandem. The problem for the Dolphins last year was the trenches, honestly.
Yeah,
They couldn't run block,
definitely.
couldn't run block against the better teams. They couldn't pass block long enough for the better teams, and they couldn't get pass rush. So even when you look at, kind of look at the defensive front, and you look at they got Shaq Barrett, but they lost Andrew Van Ginkle, and we don't know the timeline. I mean, McDaniel said there is no timeline for Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. That does concern me. That still does concern me, because obviously they're going to come back at some point, but we don't know when. And let's be honest, we don't know what they're going to look like immediately coming off significant leg injuries, ACL for Chubb, Achilles for Jalen Phillips. So I think the gap has been closed a lot, just in, free agency. Obviously, again, a lot of it for the Jets is contingent on, guys staying healthy, guys who don't have a track history, a track record of staying healthy doing so. And a lot of it for the Dolphins is, can they fill some of these remaining holes in the draft, and with some of this money they're going to get in June? And then I think the really big question is, what happens with Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. I think those guys are kind of like X factors, quote unquote. You could say, just because we don't know when they're coming back and how they're going to look. And I think that when those guys were on the field together, we saw the defense really jump. Like obviously when Jalen Ramsey and Xavien Howard got together, I think we definitely saw the team take off. But it was like also that duo of Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb were playing their best ball, before Phillips went down, and then Chubb later on.
Yeah, I mean, and anytime you have two guys on the edge like that are, creating problems on your edges, and you've got Christian Wilkins, pushing the guy, pushing everything back up the middle to where, the quarterback, and we're mainly talk, of course, talking about the passing game because it's a passing league now, creating a real problem with the quarterback. Yeah, I mean, that gums everything up, and all three of those elements are either gone or question marks right now. So yeah, that's I still think because yes, there are questions about the Dolphins defensively, but I think they've done as good a job as they could have done in, replacing what they've lost. They can't, can't speed Chubb, Bradley Chubb, and Jalen Phillips back, and so I still have a question about what we're going to see from the New York Jets, and
Rightfully so. That's understandable.
it's always interesting to me. Like you get there are certain players are. There are certain players who can play. You can take them and put them in their position on any team, and they're fine. They're gonna be fine. And there are other players. They're like, just picking a thing out. That's a great 49ers tight end. He's not going to be a great Raiders tight end, and so. Mike Williams, and you think wide receivers can it transfers, but we've seen sometimes wide receivers don't travel well, so that's I mean that's going to be an interesting coming together, and especially if Aaron Rodgers is still kind of trying to get his own self together, in New York. I still like the Dolphins better because I feel like I know more of what, like you said, there's a
It's
lot of
less unknown.
ifs.
Yeah.
You're
So
right. All those ifs. And yeah, if all those ifs come up your way, well, you're walking, you're going home early and feeling pretty good. But it rarely happens like that. And so, yeah, for that reason, I'd stay with the Dolphins now in this, in this bit of mental masturbation we're doing in early April, when we don't have anything better to do.
That's fair. That's fair. Last year, I think everyone was kind of anticipating, hoping for a three-team race, between the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets. Obviously, the Jets season kind of ended right as it started. The Bills looked like they were on some shaky ground before turning things around and, stealing the division crown away from the Dolphins. But it is a pretty pivotal season for all three of those teams. The Bills, trying to get back over the hump here. They haven't been to the AFC Championship game in a couple of years. Obviously, the Jets, trying to make something out of this kind of mini Aaron Rodgers era, and the Dolphins again entering year three of the Mike McDaniel era. Some people saying the window may have closed. Mike McDaniel does not believe that. He believes that they have a roster that is ready to compete for years and years to come. It is going to be a big year to see what changes they can make and whether they can finally get that elusive first playoff win under Mike McDaniel, and the elusive playoff win that has been evading the entire franchise for about 2 decades now.
That's elusive.
Yeah, very, very, very
It's like ghostly,
ghostly.
mythical,
Yeah.
Sasquatch
Whatever,
playoff win.
all the terms you want to use. Yes, yes.
of playoff wins.
Now, most definitely, Mike McDaniel has alluded to that multiple occasions. So, that is the goal that they are actively trying to achieve. All right, that brings us to the end of another edition of the Dolphins in That podcast. Before we head out, I have some news. This will be my final taping of the Dolphins in That podcast. My time with Miami Herald is ending on Friday. Very bittersweet. This has been my home. South Florida has been my home for the past 2 years. It has truly been a pleasure to be on the Dolphins beat. I'm eternally grateful for John Devine, Alex Mena, Monica Richardson, so many others for this opportunity. I had, beyond my wildest imaginations that, I would have left home. Just about 3 years ago, came down here on my own, knew nobody here, and to do what I love, which is to write about sports, write about the NFL. I want to thank you, David, for taking on this journey with me, about a year or so ago. Weekly tapings, technical difficulties, a bunch of bloopers that you all will never see. I really have appreciated it. Trying to thank too many people to name. Obviously, I want to thank everyone who was tuned into this podcast. Obviously it was a lot of big shoes to fill when Armando and Adam left. And then really, being passed the reins of the podcast was very daunting at first, but it's something that I've grown to really appreciate, and I think has really helped me as a journalist. So I am just truly grateful to everyone who's listened to the podcast, who has sent emails, voicing their appreciation, their love of the podcast, who has read my work, the hundreds and hundreds of stories that I've written over the past couple of years. I truly, truly am appreciative, and I'm definitely going to miss the Herald, miss the market. So thank you so much.
Man, right as we were getting going, getting going good, and you gotta go
Whoa. Can't reveal it
to,
yet. No, we got
yeah,
I keep it
well,
under
you know,
wraps, but
picking your talents elsewhere.
like LeBron, reverse LeBron. I took my time to South Beach, taking it elsewhere. But again, just really, really appreciative to everyone who has supported me, supported the podcast, supported my work, and on the Dolphins beats. It's definitely been a pleasure. Oh, go
No,
ahead.
I was gonna say it. I we at the Herald really appreciate you jumping in a And yeah, following up, Adam, who was on the beat for a while, and Armando, who was on the beat forever, longer than like a lot of the
Been
players have been
alive.
alive. Maybe longer than the coach has been alive, I'm not sure. Yeah, and I think you've done a tremendous job with it, and buried the podcast the first year or so. Solo, and then kind of doing the heavy lifting the last 2 years with with me, and it's been appreciated. And we at the Herald are we're happy you happy, but we don't like to we don't like to lose those who've who flourished here. And so yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate the kind words. And again, truly has been a pleasure. South Florida will always be I guess my second home. Obviously Baltimore is my first home, but it definitely was a fun time. Would have never imagined that I'd be living in Miami. Again, doing what I love. And again, just really, really, truly grateful and blessed for this opportunity. Again, that brings us to the end of another edition of the Dolphins and Net podcast. I will not be back next week to recap another week of Dolphins football. But again, thank you so much for allowing me to provide your Dolphins coverage for the past 2 years. You guys take care. See you.